I'm Shanna Hutchison, dietitian, blogger, and mama, born and raised in the heart of the Midwest. I believe that wellness goes way beyond what we eat and that our body size does not determine our worth. I am passionate about showing other women how to live a life they truly love, one that feels purposeful, that helps them feel their best physically, mentally, and emotionally, and that being a mom can be one of the best things you ever do without it becoming your entire identity. This is a place you can come to hear vulnerable and interesting conversations about health and wellness, motherhood, entrepreneurship, and more. If you want to find freedom with food, learn how to improve your overall well-being, and stop waiting for a number on the scale to start living your best life and go after your goals, then you're in the right place. I'm so excited to learn and grow together. This is the Wellness for the Win podcast. Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Hutchison, and today we are diving into a topic that I love, and that is all about feeding your babies, specifically using a baby-led weaning approach. So I want to preface this episode by saying that there is no one right way to feed your baby. Please know that. I know it can feel so overwhelming, especially as a first-time mom, when you are flooded with messaging about this and that, and you might feel like a failure if you're doing one thing, and this influencer says you should do this, and another one says you should do this. It can be super stressful. I understand that completely. So trust me when I say, you know, our pediatrician, actually, Dr. Hartman, said it best in episode 52 on how to prepare for a new baby. She said, if you absolutely love your baby, you can't screw this up. We are all just doing our best here. You know, you have to trust your instincts sometimes. And of course, education is powerful as well and can be super helpful. And while the amount of information that we have available at our fingertips today is a blessing and a curse, I think we just have to be a little bit choosy about where and who we are getting our information from and narrow it down to like a few trusted sources rather than following like 150 different accounts that are sharing conflicting information and causing more stress than anything. So today's guest is a fellow registered dietitian. Her name is Katie Ferrero, and she is the host of the Baby-Led Weaning Made Easy podcast. I literally binged all of her episodes as we anticipated starting solids with Rhett at 6 months and kind of throughout those early days of feeding as well. And it was so, so helpful. I just really wanted to feel as informed as possible. That's just kind of like my personality. But I did have a desire to do mostly baby-led weaning, but I wanted to just ease in with whatever felt most comfortable for all of us. And as you will hear in this interview, there is absolutely a place for purees, regardless of which method you choose. So I really hope that you will find this episode to be helpful as you navigate your feeding journey with your little one. Let's go ahead and dive in and learn from Katie.
Hi, Shanna. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for being here. I'm so happy to have you. Please tell my listeners a little bit about who you are. I was just telling you offline, I really truly binged your podcast before starting solids with Rhett. And so you are such a huge resource to us in our journey of starting solids. And I have so many mamas in my community who are kind of in that season of, you know, anticipating starting soon, or maybe they're in the beginning stages of baby-led weaning and they're very overwhelmed and scared and all the things. So, tell us a little bit about your podcast, who you kind of work with and who you help. And then we'll dive into all kinds of questions.
Well, I feel you on the overwhelming part. I remember when I started solid foods with my oldest, I just did what my doctor told me to, which was like start rice cereal when she was almost 5 months old. And it was terrible. Like she hated being spoon fed and I felt like she hated me. And I remember just like struggling so much with trying to get her how to eat and feeling like such an abject failure. Cause like, what kind of mom can't feed their baby? And then being a dietitian, I was like, geez, what kind of dietitian mom can't feed their baby? So at the height of our feeding frustration, my husband and I found out I was pregnant with quadruplets. Now, we had been doing fertility treatment, so I knew the potential for multiples was there. It was definitely not expecting 4 babies at once. And I remember the first time I saw them on the ultrasound, I was like, how am I going to feed 4 babies at once when I can't even feed the one baby that I have at home? So fast forward, and my quads were born at 34 weeks, and they spent the first part of their life in the NICU, you know, breathing and growing and getting stronger. And we would always be there feeding the babies and people would come. And I remember a colleague of mine who's a dietitian asked me, like, you know, how's starting solids going? She had a baby the same age and she was just like bragging about how great her kid was eating. And I was like, oh, it's actually going terrible. Like she hates me. She hates being spoon fed. I hate this. I stink at this. I'm like pumping for all these babies and still not making enough. Like I'm an abject failure as a parent. And my colleague was like, well, why don't you try baby-led weaning? And I was like, baby linguine? What are you talking about? You know, this thing called baby led weaning. It's an alternative to conventional spoon feeding where you wait till the babies are 6 months of age and then you offer them soft, solid strips of real food and they learn how to feed themselves. And there's no force feeding. There's no mealtime battles. There's no short order cooking. There's reduces the risk of picky eating. I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds too good to be true. So I had a lot of downtime because I was in the NICU and like a lot, but I also was on sabbatical from, I'm a college nutrition professor and I have a lot of friends in infant feeding, thankfully in higher ed, who I was like, hey, have you guys heard of this thing called baby led weaning? Like it sounds too woo woo. Like I'm not into like parenting trends stuff. Like they're like, no, there's actually some research that supports baby led weaning as a safe and effective alternative to conventional spoon feeding. So when the quadruplets were 6 months adjusted age, I was like, I'm going all in on this baby led weaning thing. Cause I'm not dealing with picky eating. I can't force feed four babies by spoon. And it just doesn't feel right. It felt so wrong to be doing that to my daughter, who, by the way, like at that point still hated food. So at their 6 month adjusted age, we started baby led weaning and it was just a struggle at first. Like at that time, there were no good resources on how to do baby led weaning. Lots of stuff about what it was. And we can talk about that and the research behind it. But like the actual step-by-step of like, how do you make lamb safe for babies to eat? How do you make the allergenic food safe for your babies to eat so you don't have to buy supplements? How do you offer other plant-based sources of high iron food so you don't have to force feed rice cereal? But through a lot of trial and error, we figured it out. And I realized that by the time the babies turned 1 year old, they had tried over 100 different foods. And that idea really kind of stuck in my mind. Cause if you look at conventional spoon feeding, most babies have only tried 10 or 15 different foods by the time they turn one. And the quads at that point had tried over 100 foods. And honestly, baby led weaning ended up being such a more positive foray into foods. And it was such a transformational experience for our whole family that I ended up switching the entire focus of my nutrition career to specialize in focus exclusively in baby led weaning. So I've been teaching this for almost 7 years at this point. And at that time, like when my quads were still 18 months old, we had another set of twins. So we were going to have one more. We transferred two with IVF and got two babies. So we had seven kids, three and under for a while there. It was like utter chaos. But at that point, I'd been teaching baby-led weaning full time. So I took this idea of the 100 first foods approach and really refined it with my baby twins, Gus and Hannah, did the 100 first foods program, kind of moved it more into a much more formalized framework. So I teach a five-step feeding framework where we introduce five new foods a week. And at that point, had really just started teaching baby-led weaning. It was like, you know, I spent all this time making all of these meal plans and these menus and these shortcuts for how to make all these foods safe and teaching how to make these exact 100 foods safe for your baby to eat. So I started sharing it on social media and I started selling digital courses to parents about 6 years ago on how to do the 100 first foods approach. And so we've now helped tens of thousands of families give their babies a safe start to solid foods using baby led weaning with this 100 first foods approach. So I have the original 100 first foods program, and we have a podcast that's just about 3 years old at this time. We launched it right at the beginning of the pandemic. So it's such a wonderful free resource for parents to learn about starting solid foods safely. Cause that's my big focus. And we can talk about that today, but there's so many non-credentialed feeding people out there giving advice that is not only outdated, unsafe, but it's downright dangerous. And so I think it really is important that we be getting our feeding information from credentialed feeding experts. So I was so excited to chat with you because I know you're also a dietitian. And I just, I love this concept of, you know, really allowing our babies to eat so many more foods than we give them credit for, but doing it in an age-appropriate, developmentally appropriate way that fits with the family's food cultures, that also helps prevent a lot of pain down the road. Because anyone with, you know, a severely picky eater or toddler, a lot of times they come into our ecosystem like pregnant, like you, pregnant with a second baby. I know you did baby led weaning with Rhett, but a lot of people didn't do it with their first baby. And they, like me, struggled with spoon feeding. And like, I don't want to have this severely picky eater. I don't want to short order cook. I don't want to only have five foods that are their safe foods that they can eat. And so they discover baby led weaning because there is a fair amount of research that shows it helps reduce the severity of picky eating. There's no way to prevent picky eating 100%, but baby led weaning can really cut down on the severity because we all know second year of life, babies, they develop food neophobia, fear of new foods. They become picky eaters. And that's developmentally appropriate. You're not doing anything wrong if your one-year-old is a picky eater. Yeah. But if your child only has 10 or 15 foods by the time they turn one and you lose those 10 or 15 foods to picky eating, that becomes a really challenging child to feed. But if your baby has 100 foods that they can eat and you lose 10 or 15 of those to picky eating, it's no big deal because you have 85 or 90 foods the child will still eat. So we're really working on this idea of diet diversity and helping families really push their baby's palate in that all important flavor window when they will like and accept a wide variety of foods and flavors and tastes and textures.
Yes, absolutely. Love all of that. And that was just something that I took away from your podcast was like the importance of variety. And again, just as dietitians working with adults too, we know that variety is important throughout our entire lives. And so it's like, why wouldn't it be important for our babies from the get-go to have a wide variety of foods in their diet, not only to expose them to different tastes and textures, but also different nutrients, right? And, you know, you talk a lot about, you know, like iron, for example, and, you know, ways to get adequate iron in your baby's diet. So there's just so many different things that we have to consider in this feeding journey. And again, I know for parents who are out there who are like, oh my gosh, I already feel overwhelmed. Don't feel overwhelmed. We're telling you it's very possible. And, you know, start slow and start at a pace that feels good for you and your family. And it doesn't have to be all or nothing. But I think the biggest takeaway that I kind of gathered when I was first learning about baby-led weaning is really it's just like giving your baby autonomy and independence in the feeding journey, right? And, you know, how would you kind of like define exactly what baby-led weaning even is? Like, what's the difference between the spoon feeding? Like, parents might think, okay, does that mean I can never feed them with a spoon, or I should never use spoons? Like, they should only use their hands. I guess, can you kind of make that little distinction first before we kind of dive into some of these other questions? If you are listening to this episode, you most likely have a little one. So I wanted to share about a brand that we have used and loved since Rhett was a tiny baby, and that is Tubby Todd. You've probably heard of them. They are famous for their all-over ointment, but they have tons of other products too, like bath soaps and shampoos, diaper cream, sunscreen, and they have stuff for babies and toddlers and even products for mamas. So when Rhett was a little baby and had cradle cap on his forehead, their all-over ointment was really helpful with that, and it was also great for other dry patches that he would get on his skin. And we continue to use and love all of their bath soaps and shampoos, and they have so many yummy scents. But the best part is that they're all super gentle and don't irritate his sensitive skin. Their Sweet Cheeks diaper paste is also a favorite. It works like a charm on diaper rash. And one of their other products that I love is their mineral sunscreen, especially the face stick, because if you have a toddler, you know how challenging it can be to get them to sit still for 10 seconds. So this is super quick and easy to apply. And they also have a mineral mist as well that I've been eyeing, because once again, that sounds easier to put on than rubbing on cream. So if you're interested in trying any of the Tubby Todd products, you can use my affiliate link in the show notes and get 10% off your purchase. I hope you and your little ones will love them too.
So as a dietitian, I know you're probably in the same boat as me, that a lot of times we just tend to focus on how much is my baby getting. So one thing I would advise parents is to really zoom out and tell yourself and remind yourself, and even if you don't believe it, how much nutrition your baby is getting from food does not matter when you're starting solid foods. Most of your baby's nutrition will continue to come from infant milk, it's breast milk or formula, even after you start solid foods. And parents put this unnecessary burden of pressure on their shoulders by thinking, oh my gosh, my baby needs to be getting all this iron and all these calories and all this fat from food. Hello, they don't know how to eat food yet. You can't possibly expect them to get nutrition from a thing they don't know how to eat. Babies need lots of time to learn how to eat. So with baby-led weaning, the simplest way to describe it is it's an alternative to conventional adult-led spoon feeding, whereby babies learn to feed themselves wholesome, safe foods offered by their parents and caregivers. And I love it because it's a responsive feeding method. It supports our baby's inborn ability and their desire to be an active participant in that transition to solid foods. And there's lots of benefits to baby-led weaning. It's like a relatively new term and a parenting phenomenon, but the baby-led weaning approach and the philosophy, it's really millennia old. If you think about it, different cultures and ethnic groups around the world have historically offered and continue to offer their babies modified versions of the same foods the rest of the family eats. So, you know, contrast that with commercial baby food, which, you know, largely Western innovation that's only been available and marketed since the earlier part of the 20th century. I always tell parents, like, what do you think Cave Mama fed Cave Baby before there was an entire aisle of pouches at Target, right? Like, yeah. With this approach, we allow the baby to learn how to eat. And that's the most important thing. Less emphasis and pressure on how much the baby is eating. And so the benefits include increased autonomy and participation in family meals from the baby's first bites. There's also reduced risk of selective or picky eating later in toddlerhood. Again, no one's saying we're absolutely preventing picky eating, but the severity of it is much less. You're going to have a lot more foods your kid will eat if you have a lot more foods your baby has eaten. And then we also know there's a decreased risk of food allergies, and that's due to earlier exposure of these potentially allergenic foods. So with this whole baby-led approach, babies are allowed to learn how to recognize and respond to their inborn hunger and satiety cues.
Awesome. Yes, absolutely love that. With that said too, you know, I asked my audience, I'm like, okay, what baby led weaning questions do you have for those who are, you know, again, anticipating that or just getting started? And so many people just submitted and they're like, where do I even start? You know, people are just like, I don't even know how the heck to begin this journey. And they feel nervous and overwhelmed. And again, I think we want to also note that, you know, I'm passionate about, obviously, we never want moms to feel shame for what they're doing, right? You know, if you're doing baby led weaning or purees or formula or breastfeeding or a combination of all the things, that's amazing. You know, you're doing a great job. So, you know, give yourself some credit, all the moms out there. So don't feel like it has to be all or nothing here. But when it comes to baby led weaning, you know, what are some of the foundational things in terms of like where to begin? Are there any specific foods that you find babies are most successful with in the very beginning? I know you have some like first foods that you kind of recommend. Can you kind of give us an idea of what that looks like for most babies and families?
So there are no right or wrong foods to start with. That's important to recognize.
Yes.
There are foods that we don't feed to babies for safety reasons and to reduce choking risk. And first mention of the word choking, I do want to add that the research shows us that there's no higher risk of choking when you start solid foods with a baby-led approach compared to conventional adult-led spoon feeding. But that only holds true when the parents and caregivers are educated about reducing choking risk. So we always recommend that parents take an infant refresher CPR course prior to starting solid foods. I know you took CPR before your baby was born. That was over 6 months ago. It's important to take that refresher. I mean, I, for one, can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, let alone the particulars of an online, you know, or CPR course I took 6 months ago.
Right.
But choking is a very rare but real risk. And so we do a lot of education on making the food safe. And so I mentioned I teach a five-step feeding framework, and we introduce five new foods a week. And we do that because five new foods a week is 20 new foods a month. And in 5 months, your baby has eaten 100 foods. Now, how do you pick the foods? Well, we have the foods. I have my original 100 first foods list, and the foods are divided into five categories. There's a fruits category, a vegetables category, starchy foods category, protein foods category, and allergenic foods category. On Monday, we offer a new fruit. On Tuesday, we do a vegetable. On Wednesday, we do a starchy food. On Thursday, we do a protein food. On Friday, we do an allergenic food. And we cycle that through, acknowledging that very early on, your baby doesn't eat very much of it, but mm-hmm. babies need lots of practice, and practice makes progress. I also teach a purees for a few days approach, where for the first 3 days, we'll do a thin puree of avocado on day one, for example. On day two, we'll do a thin puree of the banana. On day three, a thin puree of the sweet potato. But that's not the only food we feed that day. Go back to day one on avocado. We do a thin puree avocado with breast milk or formula, nice and thin, offered off of a pre-loaded spoon. Baby-led weaning does not mean skipping purees. Purees are a very important texture for babies to master. They're just not the only texture that babies can eat. So we can honor the self-feeding principles of baby-led weaning and still incorporate pureed foods by doing what's called the pre-loaded spoon approach, where you take the pureed avocado, put it on a baby-led weaning spoon, which is a short, fat, round handle and a small bowl that's sized for the baby's mouth at 6 months of age. Put the spoon in the baby's hand. You can gently help guide the spoon to the mouth, but oftentimes the baby will bring it to the mouth by themselves. It's not super neat. They get it all over the place. That dribbling down the side of their mouth, which feels uncomfortable, do not wipe it. We really encourage you not to wipe your baby while they're eating. That's a negative sensory experience. Like, how would you feel if you were trying to learn how to eat off of a spoon and this lady's like attacking you with her wet wipe or her washcloth, right? Let it dribble down the side of the baby's mouth. Yeah. That's a learning opportunity for them. Oh, that feels uncomfortable. The next time I get that spoon in my hand, I'm going to tilt my head a little bit this way and close my lips a little bit that way so that I don't get that uncomfortable feeling. So we'll do about 5 minutes of that thin puree of avocado, and then I'll do a chunkier puree, just mashed up avocado, again, offered off of a preloaded spoon, or oftentimes the baby will pick it up with their hands. And then in that same feed, I'll also do soft strips of avocado for the last 10 minutes of the feed. So the baby's had a thin puree, a chunkier puree, and soft solid strips of avocado in a 20-minute feed. Most babies, when starting solid foods, can sit in their high chair for around 15 or 20 minutes. If you have one of those babies who doesn't love the stroller and doesn't love the car seat, then they're not going to love the high chair. So there are some pre-feeding skills and pre-feeding activities that we can engage our babies in before we start solid foods to get them comfortable with things like sitting in the high chair. And so I can share some of those resources for you after the podcast if you want, but really we don't start until they're 6 months of age, plus showing the other reliable signs of readiness to feed. And then day two, we do the banana, same thing, thin puree of banana, chunkier puree of banana, soft, solid strips of banana shaped in pieces about the size of your adult pinky finger. Your early eater, they don't have their pincer grasp, right? They can't pick up small pieces of food. We don't offer small pieces of food to early eaters, okay? We offer the longer pieces about the size of your adult pinky finger, and your baby uses their whole hand or their palmar grasp to rake and scoop the food up and out of the suction mat or bowl and feed themselves. So they can do the soft, solid strips of bananas. We never offer banana with the peel on. You see that sometimes on social media, incredibly dangerous, huge choking risk. We actually know of babies who followed that approach who have choked on banana peel. You don't eat bananas with the peel. Don't offer your baby foods with peels. So on day three, I'll do sweet potato, then puree, chunkier puree, and then also soft, solid strips of sweet potato. And then by day three, I don't puree any other foods. The baby doesn't need that. They've demonstrated to you that they can handle things besides liquid because they didn't choke and die. They might gag a little bit. And gagging is a natural and necessary part of learning how to eat. And we do a ton of education about recognizing the difference between gagging and choking, because gagging is an indicator that your baby's learning how to eat. They eventually learn how to chew and move the food to the back of their mouth. And if it gets too far back, they gag, they push it forward, they spit it out, they recover on their own, and they go right back to feeding themselves. They don't need you to intervene. And so we move through that cycle. We'll do a new meat on day four, an allergenic food on day five. And starting usually on day three, we start in the second half of the meal offering multiple foods. So we kind of teach a progression of how you introduce one new food a day, but then you continue to reintroduce the familiar foods from previous days. Because you know this from your experience with Rhett, that a baby may need to see a food 10 or 15 times before they like or accept it. So we don't just like offer the sweet potato once and be like, oh, hated it, never going to see it again.
Yeah.
No way. Right. Babies need to see those foods a lot, but they need lots of practice learning how to eat. And we generally do solid foods about 1 to 2 times a day when your baby is 6 to 7 months of age. When they're 8 to 9 months, bump that up to 2 to 3. And then by 10 months of age, we like to see babies eating 3 times a day. The milk in between their meals is their snacks, continuing to provide nutrition, but babies do not need snacks. And then ideally by 12 months of age, baby is getting most of their nutrition from food. So it feels like a lot. Oh my gosh, you're going from 6 months where my baby's getting 100% of their nutrition from infant milk. And by 12 months of age, you're saying most of their nutrition can come from food. Heck yeah. They have 6 months to do it. If you do 2 to 3 feeding times, 5 to 7 times a week, we really encourage parents not to skip days if you can. We know life gets busy. I mean, that's so many experiences for your baby to learn how to eat. Practice makes progress, and they will get there, getting most of their nutrition from food by the time they turn 12 months of age.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you say practice makes progress, because that is just such a perfect line for, once again, parents to give themselves permission for this not to look perfect. It's going to be messy, literally and figuratively. You know, like you said, they're going to make a mess. They're going to get food everywhere. There's going to be stuff on the floor, on their face, on the high chair. That's okay. Embrace the mess. It's part of the process. It honestly makes it fun. And if you can go into the experience, I think, of starting solids, knowing that it's going to be messy, it's not going to be perfect, and just like embracing that, I think that can be so helpful to just kind of like let go. Because I'm someone who, and I'm sure you can relate to this, I think most dietitians are very type A kind of people. And we often, you know, we like structure and order and for things to look like, you know, neat and pretty. But, you know, so kind of like let go of that control going into the feeding journey, I would say.
That's so well put, because the whole type A and control thing, part of this is a responsive feeding method, right? When you start solid foods, you are extending what the baby has been learning for the first 6 months of life, which is you've been responding to their cues, right? When they cry, you breastfeed or you offer them a bottle. When they're full, they turn their head away from the breast or the bottle. Why at 6 months of age do we as a culture strip away the baby's autonomy and their participation by arbitrarily force feeding a pureed food that they don't want down their throat when every cue they're telling us is, don't do that to me? And when you watch them do it for themselves, you realize, oh, this is just an extension of the responsive feeding methods that I've been employing in the first half of infancy. And so that's the work that we're really trying to do, is to reframe the narrative about starting solid foods, that force feeding babies by spoon, it should not be the norm. That should be the exception. It shouldn't be a thing, because babies can feed themselves and they want to. It's developmentally appropriate for children at 6 months of age to start finger foods. And we actually know from the research that it's the children who've had the least experience with finger foods that are actually at elevated risk of choking. So for those of you moms listening that are just so scared to make that switch from purees or from infant milk, if your baby's 6 months of age and sitting on their own relatively independently, and their feet are placed flat on a solid foot plate or footrest on their high chair, your baby is not going to choke on food. As long as their waist is at a 90-degree angle, their knees are at a 90-degree angle, and their ankles are at a 90-degree angle. That's the proper, what I call 3x90 setup for a high chair. Now, if your baby's reclined and they open their airway, heck yeah, people do things all the time that increase the risk of choking. Actually, as a dietitian, you'll appreciate this. So remember when you took your nutrition throughout the life cycle class and you used, like, there's one life cycle book published by Cengage. It's in its 5th edition. They literally still and I took nutrition and I became a dietitian over 20 years ago. And we use that same book. They still talk about feeding white rice cereal somewhere between 4 to 6 months of age and waiting 3 to 5 days between foods. Those are three incredibly dangerous and reckless recommendations. And they're in the primary text for how all dietitians learn how to eat. On top of that, there is a picture in the infant feeding chapter of a baby in a bouncer chair reclined. So he said, picture, got a 45 angle off of the ground. Yeah. Airway completely open and an adult shoving a spoon down its mouth.
Yeah.
So after a lot of back and forth with the publisher, they finally agreed to let me write a text box about baby-led weaning. So starting in the 6th edition, there will be a mention of baby-led weaning in the Cengage Nutrition Throughout the Life Cycle book, which is
amazing.
Huge. Of course, yeah. All of the references and resources. And you know me, like I talk a lot and I like wrote a huge long thing and the girl's like, this is actually your word count. I was like, oh shoot, cut it all down. I sent like all these amazing pictures of babies of different abilities and backgrounds of different foods. And like, oh, we don't have room for a picture. I was like, but still, foot in the door.
Yes.
There's a mention of baby. Yeah. The WIC food and nutrition, the infant feeding and nutrition guide has a very small mention of baby-led weaning. Like these things feel very small, but like the point is because there is a credible body of research that supports this as a safe and effective alternative to baby-led weaning, coupled with it's starting to be more mainstream because of the published peer review literature that supports it and shows that babies who start with baby-led weaning, they're not at higher risk of choking. They don't have growth faltering. They don't have nutrient gaps. So all the things that people said, ooh, I don't want to do it because of that. Well, guess what? Putting anything in your baby's mouth, including a spoon, can be a choking hazard.
Right.
And feeding rice foods every single day, every major international health body recommends against the regular use of rice foods for babies because of the potential for arsenic risk, a heavy metal, a toxic heavy metal that leads to negative cognitive problems in babies. Like we can't feed rice cereal every day. Starting foods at 4 months of age, If every major international body recommends exclusive breastfeeding until 6 months of age, AAP, World Health Organization, American Academy of Family, everyone, if you're supposed to exclusively breastfeed for 6 months of age, why did you just tell me to start solid foods at 4 months? That's right. An anti-breastfeeding message. And we have to start framing it as such. There's no benefit to starting solid foods. We don't do rice foods every day. And babies can feed themselves. We don't need to force feed them.
If you're currently pregnant or postpartum and looking for some safe and effective workouts to do, you have to check out Expecting and Empowered. I used their workouts all throughout this second pregnancy and I absolutely loved it. They have workouts programmed for each week of pregnancy and postpartum, so I just loved knowing that everything was strategically created with my specific stage of pregnancy in mind in order to keep me and baby safe and strong throughout that journey. Their workouts include pelvic floor and flexibility moves, but otherwise they're very strength focused, which I really enjoyed. Now that I'm postpartum, I'm looking forward to using their postpartum guide to safely ease back into exercise in a way that feels good for me and my body and supports my pelvic floor and core as I continue to recover and gain my strength back. They also have a guide that's called Elevated and Empowered, which is their advanced postpartum guide that you can move on to once you progress past the early postpartum guide. The app also includes pre-made Spotify playlists that you can use while you work out, as well as yoga, core workouts, and even guides for returning to running. You can use my affiliate code WellnessForTheWin to get a discount on your subscription to the app, and I will leave a link for you in the show notes if you want to check it out. Enjoy! Yeah. And that was one thing that drew me to baby-led weaning as well, is that it very much aligns with like the concept of intuitive eating, is really like honoring hunger and fullness signals and allowing your baby to, you know, show us those signs and for us to honor them and trust them.
Yeah, right. Like how much money do adults spend with intuitive eating practitioners to try to reset their mentality and their physiology
right.
to exactly how they were when they were babies?
Exactly.
Which is knowing instinctively when you're hungry, and crying and eating food and stopping eating when you're full. Like, right, there's an entire part of diet culture built up around resetting ourselves back to how we were as we were a baby. And,
exactly.
and you know, think about Thanksgiving, right? Like, you know when you're full and you continue to eat and eat and eat. Like, that, like every day is Thanksgiving to a baby who is being force-fed by spoon because you're not letting the baby tell you when you're full and stop eating. And then all you're doing them is teaching them to override those hunger and satiety signals. And then guess what? You got a lifetime of a messed up relationship with food. So
yeah.
I love that. A lot of our moms are very forthright. Katie, I'm a super picky eater. I don't want my kid to be a picky eater. Or sometimes it's like my partner or my husband is super picky and I cannot deal. So I don't want this baby. Or I have struggled with eating, with weight, with eating disorders. I don't want to project my food issues onto my baby. And here you have this beautiful blank slate, a 6-month-old baby who is learning how to eat, who will like and accept a wide variety of foods. But if we only offer them avocado, banana, and sweet potato, guess what? They're never going to achieve that diet diversity that all the research shows us helps us raise independent eaters and prevent picky eaters. So those simple starter foods, if you're feeling stuck on those, avocado, banana, sweet potato, I would encourage you to really, really open up your mindset. Even if you yourself don't eat a wide variety of food, spoiler alert, your baby doesn't know that yet.
So yeah.
Get a copy of the 100 First Foods list. I offer it for free every week on my free 1 hour online video training. It's called Baby Led Weaning for Beginners. You get the 100 First Foods. You learn for an hour about baby led weaning and all the research and how to do the first 10 days. You'll have the 100 First Foods list. You can take it from there if you want. I also have additional resources if you want me to show you how to make each of the foods in there. If you don't like cooking, or if you've never cooked, or you're like, I don't know how to make these wackier whole grains or these different meats safe for my baby, but I want my baby to have a lifelong healthy relationship with food. Not about healthy foods. It's about liking food. And a lot of parents say, I love food. I just want to go to a restaurant and have my baby eat real food. Guess what? You can do it. Or we want to travel and I don't want to buy expensive pouches, which, by the way, are developmentally inappropriate and nutritionally inadequate. Like, babies can get all their nutrition from real food, but the onus is on us as parents to do the work. And I know it can feel overwhelming, but just remind yourself, like, future pace, you have to feed this small person for the next 17 and a half years of their life. You might as well do the work now when they're willing to like and accept a wide variety of foods and set the stage and that foundation so that they can have that lifelong, healthy, fun relationship with food. And mealtimes won't be battlegrounds. You guys will actually enjoy eating, and you might even actually enjoy cooking for your baby too.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, which seems, you know, like impossible for some people I know who've had, like you said, maybe a struggle with their first child and they're like, okay, I want this to look very different for baby two or three or whatever it may be. And you've touched on a lot of questions that have come through, like, do we have to wait, you know, 2 or 3 days between foods when we are starting new foods? The answer is no, unless, of course, they are the allergenic foods. So can you kind of speak to that a little bit?
And there's only 9 allergenic foods. Absolutely. So this notion of waiting 3 to 5 days between foods, and it's funny because I do a lot of education with, you know, future healthcare providers and nurse practitioners and medical students. And like, where do you guys hear this 3 to 5 day thing? Like, oh, we got taught it in our pediatrics class. And I was like, I'm going to find the person who's telling all these doctors, you need to wait 3 to 5 days between foods. And even yesterday I was speaking for the Maryland WIC Association. They did a whole day seminar on baby-led weaning. So we did all this training and they said, like, you know, I mean, the doctors are telling parents to wait 3 to 5 days between foods. I want you guys to know that that recommendation is not based on any published guidelines or any peer review literature. There is absolutely no data to support this quote unquote need to wait 3 to 5 days between food. The concern, parents are like, well, what if my baby has an allergic reaction? Well, guess what? If your baby has an allergic reaction to food, the vast majority of reactions will occur within minutes and up to no more than 2 hours following ingestion. It's not like you give your baby shrimp and then 2 days later, there's a weird diaper and they're barfing and like, oh my gosh, they're allergic to shrimp. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
So there's this waiting 3 to 5 days unnecessarily slows down your baby's progress. They will never get the diet diversity that they need and the exposure to new foods if you're unnecessarily waiting 3 to 5 days between foods. With the allergenic foods, we always do our new allergenic food starting in week one of baby-led weaning on Friday. We do it twice on Friday, twice on Saturday, twice on Sunday, with no other new foods across the weekend. We continue to introduce or reintroduce the familiar foods, the low-risk non-allergenic foods along with that food. So they're not just like eating shrimp all weekend long. Like, you can have sweet potato with it or farro with it. Like, those foods aren't going to cause allergies and your baby's already tried them and didn't have a reaction. Mm-hmm. But you want to introduce them early and often. And we don't know how much of the protein the babies need in order for it to quote unquote count as an exposure. We don't know exactly when they should start. Like, research is very gray. But we know one thing for certain, that there's absolutely no benefit to waiting to introduce allergenic foods. And for peanut, milk, and egg, we have very strong data that early introduction helps to prevent the risk of those food allergies down the road. You do not have to buy expensive, fancy supplement programs that recommend arbitrary amounts of powders that you mix into your baby's bottle. Your baby can learn to eat food-based versions of all 9 of the big 9 foods. The big 9 foods are the 9 foods that account for about 90% of food allergy. 9 weeks into starting solid foods, your baby could have knocked out all of those big 9. You'll know they didn't have any reactions. They don't have food allergies. Move on. If they do have a reaction, show you how to deal with that. It's not a lifelong sentence. Many babies will outgrow their food allergies. While food allergies are very serious, death from anaphylaxis in infancy is almost all but unheard of. So a lot of times parents are scared of something that's not even going to happen. And if it happens, it's not really that big of a deal. You just eventually start getting tracked with the pediatric allergist. If you get the allergy diagnosed, then you refrain from offering that food or eating that food. If you're scared about food allergies, I really just want to caution you about food allergy testing, though. We know that approximately 50% of positive food allergy test results are false positives. So parents going like, just blanket test me, test my baby for everything. Never test your baby for a food allergy to a food that they haven't reacted to. The best way to know if your baby is allergic to food is to feed them that food. And then if they have the accompanying signs of allergic reaction, then and only then do we take action. But the real relative risk of your baby having a true food allergy is actually quite low. And we have parents who unfortunately are withholding huge swaths of foods because they think their baby is allergic to it. Okay. Yeah. So it's important that you do get a diagnosis if there is a food allergy, but we also know a lot of parents live in this gray area of like, not really sure. Maybe you had some blood and some mucus in the baby's stool when you were breastfeeding in the first few days and weeks of life. Okay. That allergic, the proctocolitis that you're describing there, that's a really, really quick food allergy that your baby is likely already grown out of by the time they're 6 months of age. And we have parents who are like, oh, I'm not going to feed dairy. I'm not going to feed soy because of this thing that happened 6 months ago. So we really need to educate ourselves about food allergies. And that, above all else, is the most important thing, that you be getting that information from a credentialed feeding expert, not from a supplement company online that's sending you targeted marketing ads about mix-ins and things to add to your baby's bottle because they're preying on your fear of introducing allergenic foods.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, you know, really, that was what was really encouraging to me again, when like using your podcast when we were starting, was just the reminder of the early and frequent exposure. And, you know, if we're starting in week two of baby-led weaning, of introducing peanuts, for example, or peanut butter or whatever, however we're going to introduce that, don't just like check it off your list and then like never give it to them again. Like, we need to continue to incorporate that into their regular rotation.
It's not one and done for sure, but also you don't have to feed it every single day. Like, I had a mom in my office hours. So inside of my program, we do live office hours each week where I answer all of their questions about their particular baby. And she's like, so I'm doing peanut every single day now since we did peanut. And I was like, dude, why are you doing that? Like, do you eat peanut butter every day? And also, we don't do thick globs of nut butter or intact nuts. Those are unsafe for babies. We have ways to modify the peanut butter to make it safe for your baby to feed themselves. But you also don't have to do it every day. But it's not a one and done thing, right? Early and often, parents get frustrated by that recommendation because it is so nebulous. But the point is, we don't know exactly how much. So when those supplement companies are selling you, oh, I made the perfect amount of this protein that goes in this pack that you're going to buy at a very expensive subscription model price and mix it into your baby's bottle, they just made up the number of grams. Like, your baby learns how to eat food by eating food. Stop overcomplicating it is really my message. You don't have to stay away from the baby food aisle at Target. You don't need any of those things. Your baby doesn't need those. Your baby will benefit from you spending that time in the kitchen learning how to make real food safe for them, because your baby's going to eat real foods for the rest of their life. Like, show me one toddler who eats puffs and pouches and mix-ins to their bottles. Like, teach your baby how to eat real food starting at 6 months of age. You can do this.
Absolutely. And I guess one thing I wanted to mention too, so you mentioned the shape of food being kind of like the size and shape of your adult pinky finger, but what about the texture of it? So, you know, obviously we don't want to give them super hard or crunchy things when they're new eaters. Do we want it to be like, is it where you want to be able to like smash it between your two fingers, or how, you know, what's the kind of the texture that you suggest for soft foods?
You made an excellent point there. Absolutely correct that we don't offer babies any raw, crunchy, hard, or crispy foods. Those are choking hazards. We generally do offer, I mentioned the size, about the size of your adult pinky finger. That's so the baby with their whole hand or palm or grasp can rake and scoop the foods up and into their mouth. And the texture is soft, so it passes what we call the squish test. If you push the food between your forefinger and your thumb, there should be a little bit of give there. It might break off in the baby's hand. It might break off in their mouth. It doesn't matter. As long as the baby is the one driving the eating experience, then you're doing baby-led weaning. Remembering that your baby can do this. You don't need to shove anything into their mouth. Putting anything into a baby's mouth, including a spoon or a piece of food, can be a choking hazard.
Yes. Okay. Perfect. Some people ask, what's the best way to balance out meals for babies? I, of course, as a dietitian, have thoughts on this, but I'd love to hear, you know, your perspective. Of course, this is going to vary depending on the stage of their eating journey, you know, if they're 6 months versus 12 months and beyond. But how would you suggest kind of balancing out meals for our babies?
I would encourage parents, we oftentimes learn from other people's mistakes, but a lot of times parents over-rely on fruits and vegetables. Those are the easiest foods to feed. And sure, there's benefits to fruits and vegetables, but that's only about 40% of the foods from our 100 first foods list. Like, you're missing out on the starchy foods with the plant proteins, and you're missing out on the flavor of the meats and the zinc and the iron and then the allergenic foods. So don't over-rely on fruits and vegetables. What I'll generally do is, once you get going, usually towards the end of the first week, the way I build a balanced baby-led weaning plate, acknowledging that your baby does not eat very much early on, but you're getting in the habit of offering, I'll do three different foods at a meal. I generally will do a slightly larger portion of whatever the starchy food is, trying to offer whole grains as much as possible so we don't get stuck in that rice and pasta and potatoes rut. Like, there's lots of other good sources of carbohydrate that babies can eat. Then I'll do a small portion of fruit or vegetable, not both at meals, and definitely not fruit at every meal. And then I'll do a small portion of protein. So for as many vegetable offerings as you, or many fruit offerings as you put out there each day, make sure you have as many vegetable offerings. Okay. It is not true that babies who start with fruit will have a preference for sweet foods. Like, hello, your baby's already tasted sweet foods. Like, have you ever tasted breast milk or formula? The primary carbohydrate in there is lactose. It's sweet, right? Like, don't stress about that. But if you only ever offer fruit, being like, my baby doesn't eat any bitter green vegetables. Like, well, if you only give them bananas and strawberries, like, how are they going to learn how to like bitter green vegetables? So Keep your vegetable exposures equivalent to your number of fruits. Do a fruit or a vegetable. If you find that your baby is over-relying on fruit, go on what I call a fruit vacation. Take a few days or a week off. No baby has ever died from not eating fruit for a week.
Yeah, that's you touched on several different questions there. A lot of people were concerned about the fruit thing and whether or not they should wait for introducing fruit. So I appreciate you kind of speaking to that. And yes, once again, going back to variety is key in the diet for ourselves, but also for our babies. So finally, can you please, again, kind of remind us where people can find you if they want to learn more from you or, you know, listen to your podcast or utilize some of the resources that you've mentioned?
Sure. I'm online and Instagram at Baby Led Wean Team. Our podcast is Baby Led Weaning Made Easy. We do 2 new episodes a week. Monday's always a mini Baby Led Weaning training episode that I do by myself. And then every Thursday, I interview a leading credentialed feeding expert or parenting expert on something related to feeding. So that's blwpodcast.com. And if you want to grab a copy of my 100 First Foods list, I give it away to everybody on my free online 1-hour video workshop called Baby Led Weaning for Beginners. You can sign up for this week's workshop times and grab a copy of your 100 First Foods list at babyledweaning.co and come and check it out. I hope you will remember that your baby can eat so many more foods than we give them credit for, like 100 or as close to that or more than that. But don't give up after avocado, banana, and sweet potato.
Amen to that. Awesome. And I will link everything up for you guys in the show notes as always, so you can easily find her and all of the resources and help you confidently start your feeding journey as well.
Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Have a good one.
You say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Can you say wellness for the win?
Wellness.
That's hard. Can you say wellness?
Wellness.
Can you say for the win?
For the win.
You say thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Good job, baby.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and took away some tips or wisdom that you can apply to boost your health and happiness starting today. If you did, I would love it if you would subscribe to the podcast and leave a rating and review to help other women like you find my show and get inspired to start living a life they love. Also, take a quick screenshot and share it to your Instagram stories. Be sure to tag me at Wellness for the Win so I can see why you love today's show. Thank you so much for listening and talk to you next time.